Hi, I'm Andrew, and I'm here at the Global Academy in Hayes on the site of EMI's old vinyl factory. This factory would have once produced over 55,000 vinyl records a day. EMI was home to Beatlemania in the 60s and was the starting point for some of the world's most famous bands and singers, including Pink Floyd and the Beatles. Love, love me do. It was also home to technology that would soon shape our world, from medical revolutions to keeping our country safe from the threat of invasion. This is a story of EMI. The electrical and musical industry, or EMI, was set up in 1931 when its predecessor, the Gramophone Company, and the Columbia Gramophone Record Company went bust during the Great Depression of the 1930s. The sales of records dropped by over 80%. The management of the Gramophone Company and Columbia needed to do something. It was this merge of the two companies that created EMI. EMI wasn't only famous for its record label. It had an entire department specialising in research and development. Some of the brightest minds of Britain were working hard to make the next revolution in technology. Genius EMI scientist Alan Blumlein developed the first ever technology for recording and playing stereo sound. The technology was simple. Two microphones were set up in the middle of a large room to give the sound width. The orchestra being recorded would then be arranged loudest at the back and quietest at the front. They would play their music, and while this was happening, they'll be recorded straight onto a vinyl disc. This is the first ever stereo recording made by Alan Blumlein at Abbey Road Studios during the 1930s. But this wasn't Blumlein's first stroke at changing the modern world. In the 1940s, Blumlein was a major part of the H2S radar system that aided Allied bombing during the Second World War. Many of his colleagues predicted that the project would fail, but in fact, it made a huge contribution to the war effort, and as a result, it is said that it shortened the duration of the war dramatically. Fast forward 20 years to the 1960s, and EMI had three different record labels. Columbia, who were signing acts like Frank Sinatra. Fly me to the moon, let me play. His master's voice signing acts as big as Elvis Presley, and Parlophone, who mainly signed comedians such as Spike Milligan, and the biggest performers at the time like Matt Monroe. EMI were looking for something new to bring to the music industry, and in Liverpool, Brian Epstein, an eager music manager, was keen to get his band recognised and took them to Parlophone. The Beatles instantly became a hit, selling millions of albums globally. It was thanks to the help of EMI producer George Martin that they recorded 8 singles and 4 studio albums within their first 2 years. But it wasn't all success at the start. Martin King, who is in charge of the Beatles story in Liverpool, tells us more about how the Beatles started out.
First of all, they didn't go to a music school. People ask me, because they come from Liverpool, what football team did they support? And as kids, they learned guitar chords. They were not kicking footballs around. Much as they were interested in girls, they spent more time practicing chord progressions. And they got into music with an early form of folk music called skiffle, long forgotten. But people say you can write rock and roll tunes with 3 chords. You could actually start performing skiffle with 2 chords, and that's what they did. They started off like anyone else in Liverpool, not very good. Yeah, I'm saying the Beatles were not very good. They were called the Quarrymen at first, they were called the Silver Beatles, they were called Johnny and the Moondogs. They went through iterations before they became the band that everyone knows.
In their entire career spanning 10 years, they managed to sell more records than any other artist in the world. They sold 177 million records worldwide, and they are still selling records today. The Beatles are the most influential band of the 20th century. Martin King explains why they were such a success.
I think to have 3 fantastic songwriters, John Lennon, Paul McCartney and George Harrison in one band, was an amazing piece of serendipity. But I, as much as I admire George, and I truly do, the meeting 60 years ago in 1957 at a Walton Fete of John Lennon and Paul McCartney, you know, it really did create lightning, didn't it? I mean, who'd have thought those two boys, and they were boys, would have created such fantastic music? And I actually think it was because there were two of them.
From clubs in Liverpool to underground clubs in London, the 60s brought another new influential band, Pink Floyd.
We don't need no education. We don't need no...
1967 brought EMI to look for their next big hit. And where better to look than the psychedelic clubs of London? It's been said that Pink Floyd were signed to EMI because of their attitudes. They weren't your average stereotypical rock group. In fact, they all had degrees from Cambridge.
We were the people who had our fingers on the pulse of the nation as far as EMI was concerned. So they were very nice to us because we were these young guys who furthermore were not spivs from the East End. We weren't called blimey, you know, I've got a great deal for you boys. You know, we were nice chaps from public school and, in my case, Cambridge.
Their career mainly spread from 1965 to 1995. And in that time, it's estimated that they sold well over 68.5 million records in the USA alone. The band were perceived as psychedelics at the time by the press, but no one was going to stop them becoming as big as the Beatles. Pink Floyd and EMI at the time weren't concerned with this. Pink Floyd were getting more famous and they were making money from it. They were already an instant hit, but it was when their most popular album, Dark Side of the Moon, was released, did they make worldwide success. That album alone spent 741 weeks in the Billboard Top 200 charts, which is still a record today. It was thanks to the success of the Beatles and Pink Floyd that EMI were able to expand their business from music to, yes, medical appliances. EMI invented the world's first ever CT scanner, which was used in hospitals across the world to take photos of the brain. The scanner in particular was used at Atkinson Morley's Hospital, located in Wimbledon, South London. The first trials of the new technology was in 1971. At one point, there were over 1,130 machines being used across the world. The inventor of this revolutionary machine, Godfrey Hounsfield, explains where the inspiration for the machine came from.
My first wife, Mrs. Huntzinger, passed away on a brain tumor. And if we had the brain scanner during that time, I think I could have saved my wife. That gave me the idea to buy it for our community hospital.
It was because of this new piece of technology that Godfrey earned a Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. Here is Dr. James Ambrose of the Atkinson Morley Hospital giving us an insight into the first ever CT scanner.
This is the very first CT scanner which was ever made. It was installed here in 1971, and on October the 1st, we scanned our first patient in it. This patient was actually a middle-aged female patient with a suspected tumour in the left frontal lobe, and we saw the brain in a great deal more detail than we'd expected. We were able to identify cortex, white matter, the ventricular system, and the cystic tumour which was present in this patient's frontal lobe. This was successfully operated on, and this was the result which caused Hounsfield and myself to jump up and down like footballers who just scored a winning goal.
This scanner is still around today, although it's stored in the vaults of the Science Museum based in Kensington in London. This technique is being used today, but this machine has been retired and replaced with new MRI scanning technology. Our final chapter in the EMI story is of royal heritage. Not only were EMI printing all the biggest bands of the 20th century, but they are also home to royalty. All of the royal speeches were printed right here on the old vinyl factory site and are still kept in the EMI Royal Archives in Hayes, with the first ever royal recording coming from King George V in 1923. Joanna Hughes, who is the heritage curator of the EMI Archive Trust, tells us more about the Royal Family Vinyl Archive.
We have some of the earliest recordings, and within this collection we have this incredible collection of royal recordings, specially pressed in Hayes. What we have is one of the first records made by a British monarch, and this was recorded acoustically in a private apartment in Buckingham Palace. What's interesting is that this disc would have been created for sale to the public, all profits going to the Royals' charity.
Each speech would be pressed into a master copy. This master disc would then be copied thousands of times so that they could be sent to all corners of the empire. You can still buy some of the original vinyls on eBay if you look hard enough. EMI were the biggest and most famous record label on the planet, and their main factory was based here in Hayes, now the home of the Global Academy. The most famous bands and albums were printed here, including the Beatles, Pink Floyd, as well as the Royal Speeches. At one point, this site produced over 55,000 records a day. I'm Andrew, and for more choice, search Youth Choice GA on social media.